Hello, and welcome to New Books Network, the African American Studies category. Today I have with me Jahari Jabeel, author of Conjuring Freedom, Music and Masculinity in the Civil War's Gospel Army. Hello and welcome, Jahari.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
I'm glad to have you. My first question to you is, what is the seed that birthed this book?
The seed that birthed the book is an essay by Thomas Wentworth Higginson called Negro Spirituals that I read as an undergraduate music major. That was the first time I read about the soldiers. And I recalled or retrieved that essay again as a graduate student. And I was thinking about questions of music and masculinity. Those questions had emerged out of my own practice as a musician before going to graduate school and entering the academy as a profession. I was working in church music. I was working as a minister of music. And in the early 90s, when Reverend Cleveland died, I was listening closely to much of the popular and cultural logic around Black men, gospel music, and masculinity and sexuality. And I began to read back all that I had learned as an undergraduate around spirituals and the genealogy of Black sacred music. And so at the doctoral level, I was going to do a dissertation that would involve Reverend Cleveland, but I was spending more time thinking about the soldiers, citizenship, race, religion, and that is the seed of this book.
Wow, that's a lot. And that makes sense because it's so, like, when you think of music, don't often think of masculinity or soldiers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it always definitely the gospel, right? Especially spiritual music. So that seems to be a great move. You said you practice music, right? So how did you move from practicing music into studying music?
Well, those two things have never been separate for me. I started piano lessons when I was 8 years old, and I'm very careful to name in the preface of the book or in the prelude the Black Baptist working class church that I grew up in. And so the lessons came out of that church. I took formal lessons with an elderly Black woman who was a member of that church. And I continue to work as a musician, then even in high school. And my high school was very richly endowed with a musical tradition. And so all of the resources in the way of intellectual ideas really start in that Black working class community in St. Louis. And so my formation as a musician in college, I studied with a teacher, and she was very firm about knowing the social, cultural, and historical context for what I was studying to sing. So that's always been a part, a kind of organic practice for me as an artist. And it actually is how my scholarship is shaped and formed, and my teaching. So those two things are always organic for me.
It's the music is the true artist, because that's what they say about the artist. It is just in your nature, no matter what medium you choose.
That's right. That's right.
You practice it, you teach it, you do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's the question. I'm sorry I interrupted you, but that's actually the question that I brought to bear on the soldiers, right? Because this ring shout and this document by Higginson has been cited by any number of formidable scholars in Black cultural studies, Black religious studies, But I asked, as somebody who is a practicing and working musician, I asked a slightly different question about what is the labor of music for these soldiers, right? That it isn't just the citation of a text, but there is something that it does for them that has impact on Black culture, that has impact on Black religion, and has impact upon citizenship. And so because my practice is organic, I asked a slightly differently nuanced question.
What is the labor for the soldier? Because when you think of soldiers, always thinking of them fighting, right?
Yeah.
Even in the title, when it says Gospel Army,
yeah,
immediately, that, yeah.
That's how they understood themselves. That was in that document. So what I did, Angela, is then I had to make a study of Higginson and found that this essay was a part of a larger biography, autobiography of Higginson's called Army Life in a Black Regiment. And he describes, you know, he describes his life with this regiment. And he says, you know, night after night, these soldiers gather in the ring shout. And he says they describe themselves as a gospel army. Well, they don't mean modern gospel music, but they mean to distinguish themselves between just what is the ordinary project of soldiering and militarism. They distinguish themselves as a gospel army to proclaim a different gospel of liberation and citizenship, liberation for their people, Black people. So that is what they mean by a gospel army, that they are not, they're not invested in the ordinary, mundane, usual tactics of the Union Army. And they also, by distinguishing themselves as a gospel army, they are also making the distinction between what is the typical project of masculinity, then what is their understanding or vision for a masculinity that is situated in music.
And it's amazing, because as I was reading through the book and I kept seeing the soldiers and music and masculinity, and the war is helping them with their maleness. You know, I go back to our legacy of slavery, and I think about the slave narrative, and the men are writing to prove their maleness, you know, in this place where it seems as though, and that the Black soldier is equivalent to the white soldier.
Well, it is both that, right? Because the army is a means by which to prove masculinity. So it is that. But then it is another cosmic project, right? So it is both the traditional path of masculinity, but out of that path comes a divergent masculinity, as I call it in the book. Out of that path comes a tradition of Black men in music, to which I believe Reverend James Cleveland was a part of, that that music can also offer to Black men in particular a kind of disruptive narrative of normativity, that it isn't just a means by which you articulate the masculine norms that are forced on you, but it becomes an alternative way by which to create ideas of masculinity.
Yes, and it's amazing. There's a song that you use in chapter 4 that just, I'm a church girl, so you know, I just, so I understand, and from the South as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I never would have imagined the song with the soldier. And when I read it, I just thought, exactly. It was like, oh, do Lord, remember me.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah.
Yes. And yeah. And the repetitiveness of it. Mm-hmm. Oh, dear Lord, remember me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, exactly, they're fighting. They're fighting for their lives. You know, they're around. And I could hear the shouting. So it was a beautiful song. And then what I love is how you take the remember me and then you reference it. You know, you give it in that grounding in Luke. Like, here's, you know, here's Jesus right here, right? Thief hanging on the cross. Mm-hmm. And our soldiers, that's what they were doing for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy that very much with this.
Well, song. I try because, you know, because I am situated in this tradition, I try to hear what they might have heard. And so I have a trope in the book that I talk about called listening hermeneutics. And for these Black men to perform music that says, "Remember me," for them to sing that to one another, it has a very affectionate and humanizing affect. And that is a part of the project of masculinity that I try to work with. It is rather risky, and I think unfortunate, to just see these Black men in the Civil War as tools for Black freedom. That we're working as humanity scholars with a different kind of question, that, you know, we need not just interpret Black masculinity as a means to an end. And so I try to think and listen very deeply about what does it mean for these soldiers to sing this to each other in the ring shout, in a circle, right? That it has a humanizing labor, a real affect that takes us away from all they're doing, right? And there's nothing else, but all they're doing is simply proving themselves to be Black men in white faith, right? That's all the project is. And I try to raise something alternative.
And you do a great job. You do an excellent job. I'll ask you this. Was there any movie that inspired, touched upon, that we've seen this ring shout?
Yeah, you know, the only movie that I've seen, and I find this scene of that has a ring shout is Beloved.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean that ring shout, it's not as beautiful as She Wrote It, but you know what is, right?
Yeah.
But that's a beautiful scene in that movie with Baby Suggs, you know, on that rock. And you know, true to Morrison's words, you know, the men are dancing. And that, again, when I read it, I said, you know, there is a performance to this that has a political and spiritual labor that I think needs to be reframed in a way. Because Higginson says, you know, they do this every night. You know, so that's a lot of singing, dancing, and shouting. That's a lot. And so what I also mentioned is that this ritual has a military empowerment. That I think that this is not for them separate from the battlefield. That this is the warfare that gives them what they need to be empowered on the battlefield. So whereas someone else might see this as something secular, as an aside, I see it as central to how they are making themselves as men and making themselves as cultural bearers for the future.
I just finished reading a piece and it was talking about referencing Black women, but Black people as a race.
Yeah.
We keep rising and we keep teaching and we keep reading because we have to see us as a people and teach us as a people so that our generations will keep going forward.
And, you know, there are Black women. I think this is relatively an intervention in the way of my work in this book is I really situate Black women, Tubman and I'm blanking on her name. But I situate the activity and the contribution of Black women in this chapter on Black masculinity. For sure, you know, Tubman is an officially registered soldier in this regiment. And Susie King Taylor, who is the official laundress. But Angela, to your point, she's the teacher in the regiment. She teaches these soldiers how to read.
So we're in it together. Now, I definitely, when I saw Conjuring Freedom, and then in the introduction, you began to explain conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought conjuring and gospel and conjuring, and I immediately think of magic and voodoo
mm-hmm.
when I think
mm-hmm.
of conjuring, mm-hmm. right? But somehow, let's see, you say conjure is the Black cultural practice of summing spiritual power as an intentional means of transforming reality and involves a belief in an invisible magical power that can be used for healing and or harm.
Yeah.
Explain this. Tell me a little more about this conjuring with the soldiers.
Well, it really is just that simple. So part of what struck me about researching this regiment in very empirical terms is that these folks come from a variety of geographical places throughout the Georgia Sea Islands, right? So they all bring something unique and individual to it. For example, there are soldiers who enlist from the Catholic parish on the coast of Florida. Well, that parish had a long tradition of African Catholics from the Congo. So when, for example, one of the songs that I cite in the book is "One More Valiant Soldier Here," so they sing that as a refrain, Angela, and then suddenly they invoke Mary, help me bear the cross. And I thought, well, what is this reference to Mary? And you could treat it like, oh, it's just another spiritual, but that's only if you don't do the background work on these Catholics, so these soldiers who were part of a Catholic parish. So that is how I craft my argument of conjure, is these soldiers enlist from all of these places, but the common thing they have is what all of these enslaved Africans would have brought with them, which I describe in the introduction also. And that's this capacity to summon the spirit, to summon the life force. That is a part of an African past. And it has various technologies, right? It has voodoo, it has Santeria, it has various technologies. But as we know about the enslaved Africans in America, is they weren't allowed to rename the gods in those specific and explicit ways of language. But that doesn't mean that they did not conjure the spirit. And the music, of course, is the conduit. So that is how I approach conjure. And I should also say quite honestly that is a question I had as a kid. Once I learned that the church I grew up in, that these were Black folks from different parts of Tennessee. My folks were from Mississippi. Some folks were from Georgia. I was struck by, well, how do y'all make one choir with all of this background? And it's that they agree on the work of the Spirit. So that is how I craft my argument about conjure. And I know conjure, you know, has a colonial negative word or kind of affect, but that is the point, is to reclaim it, right? Yeah. Reclaim it. If Kendrick Lamar is at a rally and everybody's singing, "We're gonna be all right," that is the labor of conjure.
And that was the beauty. That's why when I read it, I said it's probably simpler than what I'm thinking, because I'm, like you said, I'm using this stereotypical thing of conjure, and you have made it very clear, you know. And I like the way you've taken all the different religions, like you say, bring them together, because they're men in the army fighting for one thing.
Yeah,
and together they come together for freedom.
Yeah,
because that's the end goal. With the ring shout. And ring shout is beautiful. That's just another beautiful term. So I'm going to ask you this final question, because it just feels like if I was sitting in your classroom, I'd wonder what was going to happen, because you say you frame, right, your courses around music. If the class is, I'm going to say, your very basic African American studies class.
Yeah, which I love to teach. This semester I'm teaching Introduction to African American Studies, and I'm teaching another course that I offer frequently on African American religious history.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah.
How do you frame? How do you bring music in? Is your classroom filled with music? Do you have them reading spirituals?
Yeah, I do. I, well, you know, I mean, part of my background as a musician, as a musical artist, is a choral man. And so the premise for any of these classes is to get students to use their own voices in the process of learning. And of course, the voice in this academic environment has a kind of metaphorical quality, because, you know, in order to get, I have a background in getting children to sing, right? To get them to invest in learning a piece of music. Well, I apply the same principles in the classroom, is getting students to participate, because that's what singing is about. It's about collective participation. Well, that is precisely what the Project of the Soldiers is about, if you think about it. It is about collective participation. So they don't argue. And, you know, Baldwin will say this in trying to think about the human project of citizenship in the 60s. He says, you know, whatever couples argue about, they don't argue about color, right? So we don't argue about the fancy nature of somebody's ideas. The goal is to get everybody participating in the project of the semester, right? So, so in that sense, it is a musical principle that I deploy. But I also use music. I mean, I play musical clips a lot. Just as we're starting, if I can find something that really will work, right, to be provocative and to be a kind of invocation, I'll use it. I use a lot of Sweet Honey in the Rock. So I do use music in those ways, and I use musical concepts such as dissonance, right? Because it's a Black Studies course, you know, all Black people don't agree on the same method to the same problem. So there is difference, there is dissonance. There is, in my intro to Black Studies course, there is a section I do on Black feminism and Black queer voices. And wow, I don't know what's happening, but anyway. But that is to, you know, that is to be sure that we're always thinking about the various ways that Blackness is constructed, and that we don't expect there to be this one singular narrative in the study of Black life, because it certainly doesn't play itself out in that way. So yeah, I use concepts of music, and I use pedagogical approaches in getting students invested by using their voice, using their opinion in the process.
Excellent. Wow. I love this idea of music. And it's not a music course. That's what is so awesome about it.
No, not this semester.
Exactly.
I teach a course on Black music.
Exactly. Right. So I, you know, imagine walking into my Introduction to African American Studies class and hearing about music, although it's not about music. It's not a music class. And the fact that you bring to the table that there's no one singular narrative.
Yeah. And I just should add this one thing, that music in the study of Black life and history, and that's politics, whatever, music is a critical epistemology. So even, you know, whatever my feelings are about a particular genre, it's important at the moment that I'm teaching. So it's a really, I mean, if you think of these soldiers, music helps them become one. So it's a way of knowing that is crucial to the project.
Thank you. This was enjoyable.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it was definitely enjoyable. I'm hoping I can pull out a piece of it when I begin to teach. I craft my introduction classes into autobiography because I'm very much into autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the pieces that you bring into the book and the soldiers from a very different standpoint than war. So as we wrap up and we wait for your, can I ask, are you working on something else? You got a second book going on there?
I'm working on two things, that are a part of this work. One is I'm working on an essay on Reverend James Cleveland, who was considered the king of gospel music. I'm working on his early 1960s release of Peace Be Still, and talking about the song, the way the song sounds, which is not peaceful, but he's talking about Peace Be Still at the height of the civil rights era. And just talking about the paradox of peace in the American empire. So that's one piece. But I'm also continuing this work on the military, black men, and black music. And I'm looking at the two wars in the 20th century and talking about the ways in which, with both of these wars, there are premier black music ensembles that emerge. So this tradition of black masculinity and black music continues in the 20th century. So those are the two things that I can say I'm working on.
When your next book comes out, make sure you give me a shout.
Yeah. And thank you. This is very generous of you to host this and give the book some exposure. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. The New Books Network has a section where they get books received and you get to go in and look. And I was like, send me that book. You know, I was like, I want that book right there.
Oh, nice.
So it was nice that it was there, that I didn't have to wait for it. But I was like, that book, I really want to understand it. The title grabbed me. I hope our listeners will pick this book up, because as much as you think it's very academic, it's very useful. It's very enjoyable. The music in the book, it's for man and woman, but so much for our black men. You know, so much interesting for that. So we thank you for your time and your effort. And I wish you the best in all that you do that comes up. And I thank you for joining us at New Books Network.
Thank you very much.